I want to welcome Jordan Horowitz to upcoming Dis. How you doing, Jordan?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. Got a chance to watch Painless, and so for the people out there who are looking for this DVD, this is a film that you both wrote and directed, and it's a film about a main character, this guy Henry, who is born with, I don't know if it's a disease or it's a birth defect, but the deal is that he can't feel pain. He can't feel any kind of pain at all. And it kind of turns him into a bit of a scientist in search of trying to cure himself. And that's really where the bulk of the film is. So the first question I have to ask you is, where did you get the idea about this, you know, birth thing where the guy couldn't feel pain?
Well, first of all, it is a disease. It's a real medical condition called CIPA, congenital insensitivity to pain.
Oh.
With androsis, where there's a problem with the nerve ending. So literally, he can feel anything but pain.
Right.
Basically, it's funny. I was sitting in a coffee shop in New York, which is basically where I'm from, and I was kind of brainstorming what my next film was going to be, and I kind of knew I wanted to be about a lonely, isolated character, but I didn't know what the core premise was going to be.
Right.
And then I read about these kids that had the condition and kind of how serious it was and all the problems it caused them, and it just kind of like put this image in my head of what would an adult be like with this condition, who's had to make all these sacrifices in order to learn and survive. You know, I immediately started imagining this overly cautious guy who's afraid of everything and has no real life experiences, but at the same time, acting that way has kind of allowed him to get over, you know, this difficult disease he's had to deal with. So the image kind of popped in my head immediately when I read about these kids.
Uh-huh.
I kind of always imagined it as me trying to write about the loneliest person I could imagine.
Sure. Well, I got to tell you, the thing that got me was, I can imagine the first question you would ask if you haven't seen the film is, okay, why would somebody want to feel pain? But you do this really nice monologue where the guy, I think it was in a bathtub, and he talks about basically that it's the idea of wanting to have the human experience, that it made him feel not human, that he couldn't feel pain, and that was really the thing. Not that he wanted to be hurt, just that he felt like he was missing a human experience. And I thought that was a real nice way to let an audience know. Because otherwise, if you told me you were doing a movie about a guy who couldn't feel pain, I'd be like, lucky guy.
Yeah, it's funny. I get that so much. There's so many times where I pitch the story to people and told them the idea. And they're like, oh, it's like a superhero movie.
Yeah.
A guy who can't feel pain. He's invincible to everything. And I'm like, no, it's an anti-superhero movie. It's a guy that he can be so easily injured and not realize it. You know, he could be walking around with his appendix about to burst, which I've actually read about that happening.
Wow.
To somebody, because he didn't get any of the warning signs, and he just collapsed and died. You know, and like, he's afraid of everything.
Well, and pain serves a purpose. I mean, let's be honest. It's there for a reason. It's not there just to make us suffer.
Yeah, it's funny. It's interesting. Pain is kind of like our first teacher in life, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of teaches you how to protect yourself. It teaches you, you know, what's dangerous, what not to do. And if you were born without that, it is actually very difficult. You know, the opening of the movie, we have this montage.
Yes, I was going to ask you about
growing
that.
Up, and he's like sticking his hand in a pot of boiling water,
right.
And he's like getting just all kinds of crazy injuries that wouldn't happen to a normal kid. And that's actually stuff that came up in my research. I was looking at blogs and papers and different articles, and they're just parents talking about the craziest things their kids would do.
Right.
They just had no idea that it was harmful in any way.
Well, exactly, and I was going to bring up that little montage you do that looks like you kind of did that on like a camcorder, so it's different looking footage. You made it look like it was home movies of the kid growing.
Yeah, I borrowed a cheap, crappy mini DV camera from my dad, and we actually shot that after principal photography on the movie.
Okay.
First off, we were totally out of money. I mean, this was a dirt cheap, down and dirty film. We shot the whole thing for $60,000, and we were completely out of money because it's all on the screen.
Yeah.
And I always knew that I wanted the opening of the film to kind of feel like its own little short film.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to wait until after we had shot the movie, and we actually edited a rough cut just to make sure nothing really changed that much, because things always change the filming and the editing of the movie. And I just wanted to make sure we were still telling the same story before I went out and shot this. And then actually it turned out we were, And yeah, so we went out. It's basically just me and a mini DV camera and the actors. And it was actually such a fun time. It actually was a difficult shoot because we were trying to do so much for so little.
Sure.
And you know, big crew and actors to deal with. It's just a lot to deal with. And then to be able to end it with just me and a couple actors in the room was actually like one of the most fun days I've had on the whole experience.
I bet it was. And the thing about it, when you've got a movie that's got such a limited budget, you've got a movie that really is about this loneliest person in the world, you really have to depend on this actor. You have to depend on Joey Klein, because if he doesn't carry this film can get bad really fast. So how did you find him? How did you know he was the guy that was going to be able to carry this film?
It was really difficult. I'll be honest with you, all of the casting in this film was impossibly difficult. Like I said, we had absolutely no money to make this movie.
Right.
And, which is fine. There's great movies made for very small amounts of money. But usually what you find when you're doing movies at this budget level is that the acting can be a very mixed bag. And for me, I knew that, you know, given the nature of this film, it was just completely lived and died by the performances. So I just, especially, you know, Henry, character who's played by Joey, is like
absolutely
so vital. I just have a really good actor. And we actually spent about 6 months casting this film.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we didn't have a casting director, so that's basically me and my producers just going everywhere and anywhere we can.
Oh, wow.
You know, looking for people. We had casting calls in New York, Rhode Island, Boston. We actually found Joey very late in the day, like a couple weeks before we decided to shoot.
Wow.
We found him out of Toronto, Canada, which is where he's from. We did a Skype audition with him, essentially. And then the woman who plays Shaney, Evelina Marie, we found her out of Los Angeles. And that she came in very late in the day, too. She actually, she basically, we had been seeing just like tons and tons of actresses, and some of them are very talented.
Yes.
But I just wasn't finding the girl who could bring that special quality that I needed Shaney to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, we were sitting in the casting office waiting for this girl to come in an audition, and literally somebody just stumbled upon her reel and handed it to me. And
yeah.
The second I looked at it, I was like, oh my God, this is Shaney. Like, this is her. And I didn't even want to audition.
Oh, no. Poor girl.
I did, obviously. Of course, I saw her. I gave her a shot.
Yeah.
Very nice to her, but she didn't have a chance at that point. The role was ended from that point on.
Well, and you know, I found that you use the characters, kind of the other characters sparingly, and they seem to serve a purpose. I find with Shaney, at least for me, it seemed like she was the thing that actually finally made him feel human, even though he didn't cure himself at that point. So she was the thing that kind of brought him into that almost human experience. But I got to tell you who I love the most here. The most compelling character and actor you had on that is Kip Gilman as Dr. Parks. I got to tell you, I loved his performance, and the chemistry he had with Klein was phenomenal.
Yeah, Kip is an amazing actor. Again, he's done very big movies. We were very lucky to get him on this tiny little movie for very little money, and he came in very late in the day, too. And he was just such a great presence to have on set. You know, his character is kind of very calming, and he's almost got like a zen-like quality to him, and he has that in real life, too. So no matter how tense of a day you're having, he just comes in, and you look at him, and it kind of all just melts away.
So how hard was it to get that chemistry going between him and Klein? Because it was really, those two had the best chemistry in the movie.
Well, thank you for saying that. It was a process of we had a lot of conversations because everybody was coming in from different areas.
Right.
You know, Kip was also from Los Angeles. We were shooting on the East Coast in New York and parts of Rhode Island. So we didn't have a ton of rehearsal time, but we had a lot of conversations ahead of time. Everybody was very clear. Brad was very clear in everybody on what the script was.
Yeah.
What kind of movie we were telling. You know, the premise is kind of high concept, and there were times where somebody would want to get involved in the movie, and we have a conversation, and they'd immediately go to some insane, like some movie like out of the 80s, like, I don't know, Reanimator or something.
Yeah.
Something that's just a
like, Shatner School of Acting.
Yeah, and I'm always telling them, like, I always had to pull people in and say, no, this is a very grounded, realistic movie, very emotional, and being very clear about what kind of movie we were making before before everybody got on set, I think,
right.
was the key. So I think when Kip showed up and when him and Joey were in the room together, I think we were all just kind of on the same page right away. And it was actually very easy to get that chemistry going.
He adds so much energy. I got to tell you, when he was on there, to me, the energy of the film went up. When the movie was over, that's the one thing I felt I wish I had more of. I wanted to see more of the two of them together. I loved every minute they spent together.
That's awesome. That's what we want. We want you wanting a little bit more.
Right. Oh, well, exactly. You want to lead the audience. Now, this also touches on a lot of scientific stuff because you've got the lab things going on and you've got the diseases things and chemicals and such. So did you have any kind of medical consultants, anybody helping you with that while you were shooting?
I'm glad you asked. First of all, I have no medical or science background whatsoever. And there is a ton of stuff in this movie. And I was very intimidated writing a movie that was going to be that involved, especially because of my limited background in that field. But one of the first things I did, you know, it had to be, the key for me was it had to be authentic.
Right.
The movie would never work if it was all just some made up, you know, phony science that, you know,
sure.
which you've seen a lot of films, unfortunately. One thing that really bugs me.
Yeah.
And I just knew that this movie, like we lived and died by performances, the science had to be authentic
right.
every step of the way. And so one of the first things I did was I put an ad on Craigslist, of all places, for a science advisor.
No kidding.
And like a week or two after, I started brainstorming the idea. And I found this guy, and kind of like every time I needed Henry to be doing something or researching something,
right.
he would help me kind of come up with all these crazy ideas he could do, and they were all completely factual, and they were all things that he probably would be doing if
right.
he were going down this road of trying to find a cure.
Yeah.
So by the end of the, we always had somebody on set, whether it was a science or medical advisor, depending on what the day was.
Yeah.
And by the end of the film, we had about four science advisors and two medical advisors.
Wow. And was that a real lab? Because it looked like a real lab to me, when, especially the Dr. Andrews lab.
It is, yeah. We shot that in a school in Rhode Island. It was a real science lab. And actually, there was one day when somebody knocked over a canister of something, some liquid spilled on the ground. But we actually all had to, like, evacuate the lab for several hours.
Somebody call OSHA, right?
Yeah, because she had some seriously, like, dangerous chemicals in there.
Yeah.
The things you would not want to get out into the air. So we're actually super worried that we, like, released some kind of toxin into the air. But it turned out it was just some...
Well, and you know what? All these things you're saying, you know, real labs and medical tech, you know, consultants on set all the time. For a $60,000 film, you really, you managed to get a lot of oomph in there. Was there something that you ended up having to not get that you really disappointed you because you couldn't do because of the budget?
Well, it's an interesting question. There were definitely things that I wanted to do that we weren't able to get because of the budget. But your real question of am I disappointed is hard to answer because the film did change a little bit during the making of it.
Sure.
I think the biggest way it changed was emotionally with the performances.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, let me put it to you this way. There were certain things in the script where, there were certain times in the script where it would go in more of a thriller direction or more of a suspense
right.
direction. There's a drug dealer character, as you know, and
yeah.
there's a couple scenes in the movie that we ended up not using where Henry actually gets involved with this bigger drug dealer and things kind of go bad and he's got to deal with that situation. And on paper, I think it's great. Like,
yeah.
we did a table reading and everybody's like, oh, this is so awesome, this is going to be great. But when we were shooting the film, you know, it just felt a little not right for the film we were making. It felt a little like we were trying to force something in there that didn't belong. You know, the way that Joey was playing the character in a much more dramatic way and just the chemistry between the actors like you were talking about, it just
yeah.
felt like all of a sudden we were trying to make it something it didn't organically want to be.
Right.
So some of that we did try to shoot in the editing room. We kind of came to our senses and realized it had to go.
Obviously.
And some of that just on set on the day, we just kind of made the decision and we're like, you know, this isn't that movie. It doesn't need to be this.
Well, and it has to be an advantage that you're both the writer and the director. So you kind of had a lot more freedom to go where the movie was taking you during the process of filmmaking that you might not have had if it had been somebody else's material.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we definitely pivoted a lot on
Yeah.
Mostly, you know, it was budget reasons. You know, there was locations that fall through at the last minute.
Sure.
An example of this would be, there's a scene where he goes to visit Chaney in the community greenhouse.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposed to be a community garden in Brooklyn.
Right.
It was originally scripted. And then there's, if you have any experience in New York, there's just tons of community gardens. That's
right.
Where we had mapped out, like, the perfect place and got this awesome location that they would be allowed us to shoot in. And, like, 2 days before we went to shoot there, there was this huge blizzard that came in and, like, completely buried it. And the woman, I called this woman, and she's like, no. She's like, it's gone. She's like, there's literally nothing there.
Oh, no.
Like, there's nothing for them to do.
Oh, no.
And I was panicking, and I remembered when we were at the lab in Rhode Island, I remember seeing this little greenhouse in the back.
Wow.
And I like, immediately got on the phone with them. I'm like, is there any way we could just get in there for the afternoon? And they were nice enough to let us go in there. We just had to, you know, change some dialogue,
mm-hmm.
Move a couple things around, but we're able to pull it off. And I think that only happens if you're prepared in a certain way. Like,
yeah.
If I was just kind of showing up on the day winging it, and they're like, oh, there's a blizzard,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have been able to figure out how to get out of that hole. But
yeah.
I think because, like, I knew exactly what the scene was about and
right.
how it was supposed to be shot, I think
sure.
showing up there and being like, you lost your location, we were able to, like, kind of figure out an alternative, and
right.
I knew that I could just change a few lines and kind of still make that work.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, especially when you're dealing with a low budget, those things are going to be thrown at you. It's not like you have the luxury to just stop for a while and find the perfect place. You've got to do something on the fly.
We had a very finite amount of time, and any delay, like, would have threatened
right.
to just completely derail the process.
Well, and what about the crew? Is
That's
this...
another thing that happens on films of these sizes.
Yeah.
Is literally everything that can go wrong
does go wrong. Yeah.
You have to have your A-game about you kind of at every minute.
I understand. What about the crew? Is this a crew you've worked with before? Because especially in a low-budget film, you need a crew to be a really tight-knit team. You've got to be almost a family or else, because you can't afford mess-ups. You can't afford people to miscommunicate. You can't afford negativity. You can't afford those kinds of things on
yeah.
a low-budget film.
I haven't really worked with most of these people before, but my cinematographer and I spent months before the shoot
yeah.
really just having very, very long, in-depth conversations about what the look of the film was going to be,
sure.
and the style of the film. And I put together a whole lookbook of mood boards and different images that really just spoke to me.
Okay.
And colors. And one of the biggest conversations we had, that I think really, you still see it now in the film, is the way we approached shooting the film was we always wanted the look of the film and the color palette to match Henry's internal emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very cold and kind of moody in the beginning, just like he is. And then as he, like, slowly starts to come out of his shell and
right.
more shiny, like you were saying, you know, the color palette really lightens up and gets more neutral. And then that kind of changes a few times depending on what's happening in the movie. But we really spent a great deal of time kind of talking that through. And my production designer, Eileen, who I actually had not worked with before,
mm-hmm.
She was just such an amazing find. She literally had $0 to work with. She got paid, but she had no money to buy anything at all. And Henry's entire apartment / lab where he works,
right.
That's a set. Like, we built that in a much bigger space. This huge loft
uh-huh.
let us come in and kind of, like, put up a couple walls and... She had to completely
great.
Fill that with all these science props,
wow.
things that you would actually use. She was talking daily to our science advisors,
mm-hmm.
and they were just giving her, like, lists of things that you would need in there. And I'm freaking out, because I'm like, where is she going to get this? This is, like, expensive stuff.
Right,
where
yeah.
is she going to get it? And somehow she was able to get all of it, and I have no idea where she got it or how she got it.
Well, it's certainly a clever idea, and the cast really carries it, particularly Joey Klein. So, are you locked and loaded for something next, or are you still waiting for what's going to happen next for you?
A little bit of both. I'm writing a project right now that I'm really excited about, and hopefully I get the chance to get that done sometime
uh-huh.
today. But I've been doing a lot of producing. Also, I ex-produced a film. There's a short film, but I'm super excited about it, and I think it's going to be doing the festival run really soon.
Okay.
And I'm trying to help a buddy of mine get his feature off the ground. And then, like I said, I'm trying to get my next one going, so see.
Well, Painless is out on Indican Films. It's out on DVD now, so people can check it out. You can go to Amazon, I saw, and watch it there as well. So it's out there pretty well, and so that's got to make you proud, and it's a very unique film. So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it and give us some inside scoop there.
Yeah, it's great talking to you. I appreciate your time as well.